Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello, and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and this is our last show of the year 2012, and we're going to be talking about parenting resolutions for 2013. Parenting is perhaps the most important activity in all of human existence, and it can be incredibly difficult, worrisome, and exhausting, as well as exhilarating, fulfilling, and joyful. Are there simple steps which can make it easier on a day-to-day basis without jeopardizing long-term success? As we approach the new year and round out the hectic family holiday season, I've decided to offer my own thoughts on our show today, based on more than 30 years as a family therapist and educator, as well as on my own experience as a parent of a son and a daughter, and on all the wonderful feedback I've received from my readers who've honored me by reading my books on parenting. I want to share with you some key steps which are entirely within your control as a parent and which can dramatically ease the burden of parenting while actually gaining more respect and cooperation from your children and making them happier, more successful people. I'll be sharing the 7 secrets from my book, The 7 Secrets of Successful Parents. I'm going to tell you all 7. So hang in there, please. I started my interest in parenting in 5th grade when my mother suggested I do a paper on the history of the American family. And other people were writing about a president or a war. And here I was supposed to write about the American family, and I didn't know there was anything different from the family I had and the family my friends had. But exploring the reading, the books she put in front of me, she was actually a sociologist, I realized that there are many, many different cultural approaches to family structure and parenting. But I also realized that there's a common core and that we can learn from each other. And then I traveled every summer. My dad was a doctor, and they were both amateur anthropologists. And so we traveled every summer for 4 or 5 weeks. We were so lucky to have that as part of our education. And Mom always had us read books about where we were going, about the culture, the clothes, the religion, the language, and so on. And what I learned was that people all over the world want the same things. They want safety. They want freedom. They want to be able to raise their children to have even a better life than they have. They want time and quality of life. And so I studied law. I became a lawyer. I thought I would do international relations to try to create a more peaceful world. But I also fell in love and decided that being a jet-setting ambassador wasn't really going to allow me to be the parent that I wanted to be. So then after I was married, I learned a whole lot about natural health because I wanted to keep my husband and I healthy for 100 years and also raise healthy children when the time came. And that time did come. We were living in a we'd left our legal practices in Philadelphia and were living in the country up in the Adirondack Mountains in northern New York. And we were living off the land. We rebuilt an old farmhouse, and that's where our kids were grown. I liked it. We're born. I try to tell people that I was actually re-roofing our house strung to a tree when I was pregnant with my son, and a lot of great adventures, and they wouldn't have traded it for anything. But then I had such success and fun with our young children. People started asking me, how are you making it so easy? And I realized that we really had done a lot of reading and thinking and talking before we had our children, and we were carrying through on the philosophy we developed together, and we were having just a wonderful time. Our kids were healthy, they were cooperative, they were fun, and so I started writing about Family Health and Wellness. And the rest is history. My first book came out in 1985 called You Can Postpone Anything But Love. And I became a media guest expert because I didn't speak too much jargon, and I spoke directly to parents and their families and honored their innermost wisdom. And I've written 7 books since then, and always the core is to increase people's awareness about how the small choices they make each day in their family life has huge effects on the health and happiness of their family, the relationships involved, and whether they feel as a success as a parent, and whether their children are enjoying their childhood and also looking forward to a successful future. So for my very first book, I started from what I call a spiritual idea. It works with any spiritual tradition, even a non-religious tradition, because it's about realizing that we are a global community. Humanity is a species on this earth, and we've learned a great deal through our development. And I always start with the idea that human parents have the longest time of exposure to their children of any species that's ever been on Earth. It's really 21 years by the time a child is truly mature. And recent evidence suggests the brain continues developing even in the 20s as far as maturity, and as far as learning, it can go on forever, hopefully. So that idea that we have a very long childhood, which immediately made me feel that, okay, nature versus nurture, sure, okay, when a baby's born, we've got the nature part. But from there on, as parents, our nurture, the environment, the love, the kind of experience and stimulation we give the child is in our power. So the important thing is to be aware that you have an amazing amount of power. One of the biggest myths, I think, is that our children are a clump of clay and we have to mold them and force them to be righteous and adult and moral and do good instead of bad and not be selfish. I don't believe that. I believe that each child is born with a good spirit. There's a spiritual truth to each child where they want to be good, they want to please the parent, they want to be part of a community, they want to cooperate. Now, there's so many things that make that go wrong. You know, the parents don't have to blame themselves for anything that goes wrong, but we need to start with that idea. And the core of my book, The 7 Secrets of Successful Parents, is that healthy parenting and happy family life starts in the mind of the parent, even when the child's not there. And I call that prepared parenting. It's the power of the parent to prepare their minds. And this is really, really hard today because most parents are working and you come home tired and you're like, I got to get the food on the table. I've got to get the kids to their lessons. I got to get them to sleep, get their homework done, get them up in the morning. And it's just a constant roller coaster. And so when you jump out of the car, take your coat off, try to figure out what to do for dinner, the challenge is to stop and think, and how is my next interaction with my child going to go? And it's a key moment, and it can be 90 seconds, but you need to breathe to settle yourself and say, okay, I'm done with my work. I've done with my driving. I've done with my commuting. I've got a plan. And my focus needs to be on that first greeting with my child. And I know so many parents get frustrated and they say, how is school? And the kid says, fine, and walks away. Sure, that's normal. They don't want to be put on the spot. They aren't in court. They don't want a cross-examination. But if you hang with them and share your day a little bit and say, oh, traffic was awful, but I'm really glad to be home, they may smile. and say, well, me too, or I don't know what to do with myself. They will start a conversation if you are just there for them. So the first secret is, I'll never give up on my child. I have faith in the parent-child relationship because it has worked for 200,000 years, something like that at least. And there's even new evidence that's coming out that the family groups were strong and community groups supported each other. Even if a child was born with a physical problem, the community took care of them, and even if they couldn't take care of themselves. So there's an altruism, a spiritual aspect to humanity that goes all the way back, as far as we've been able to see, certainly into prehistory and currently in some of the Bronze Age, the few Bronze Age communities that still exist around the world. So that very first secret, and I think it's the most important, is I never give up on my child. I know the child wants to be a good person. And my very first book, You Can Postpone Anything But Love, was about basically 12 operating principles, starting with spirituality, that the child comes already programmed to be a social creature and to want to be part of something larger than themselves and to be a loving person. And the other operating principles follow that. There's the love principle, that when a child's born, we think, you know, there's this idea that, oh, they come just totally selfish, totally self-centered. I think that's a myth as well. I think the child is born believing that they are the whole universe, and they eventually realize that there are other pieces and that their mom is a bit of a separate thing because she does leave the room. Dad's a bit of a separate thing, that the walls are separate, but it's not a selfish thing. It's a universal sense that they are connected to everything. So they're learning separation. They're not learning, oh, I'm not the center of the universe. They feel completely connected to the universe and they learn separation. Validation and observation are key as parenting strategies. They're principles that happen no matter what. Even if you don't think your child is noticing what you're doing, they are always noticing. And you always have the power to validate their good behavior and try to ignore or give them some instruction about the unwanted behavior. So I'll tell you one client story that about faith. I had I was counseling a family where there was a kid that kept getting in trouble in school. And I asked the mom to just imagine that she was going to his house as a grown-up and visiting her grandchildren. And she said to me, he won't live that long. He's going to be in jail. He's not going to have kids. And I asked her, does this indicate to you that you lack faith in your child? And she's like, I have no faith. He's just bound for trouble. And I asked her to repeat to herself over and over again that he was going to be okay and that he would be married and that he would have grandchildren. The short version of the story is that this is indeed the case now. But she found it very hard to make that shift, to actually feel in her heart that her son was going to be okay. And I think it was partly because she was worried about whether she was being a good mom. She'd had a difficult childhood, and she just lacked some of the confidence and assurance that I try to give parents, that children, no matter who you are, if you're a parent, they love you, they want to have your attention, and they'll be bad to get it if they can't get it by being good. So it's key that you not only feel that your child can be successful, has what she needs to succeed, but let that exude from you. That when they're being obnoxious, you can just say, hey, you know, why are you having a bad day? I know you're a good kid. just express that faith again and again, because they need to know that you recognize that they have what it takes to be a good person and a good adult and to have a meaningful childhood. So that first secret, I think, is really, really key. And they expect you to be there for them, to protect them. They hear you even if they put their hands over their ears. So keep having the faith that you need. After the break that's coming up, we're going to talk about the second secret, which is I pay attention first to my child's basic needs. And there are a lot of myths around basic needs. Please stay tuned. I want to share about that. The main thing is that we think in a middle class society, which is shrinking, but we won't go there, that our basic needs are met. You know, they have a roof over their head, they're fed, they're clothed, and so on. But we're going to talk about why that myth isn't so. So please stay tuned. We're going to have a minute or two of a break.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm departing from my normal pattern where I have an exquisite guest for an hour and we really talk in depth about different topics that relate to family health and happiness. This last show of the year, I decided to just spout forth on my own thoughts, and many of them you've heard from our wonderful guests through the year and a half that we've been on the air, but I'm focusing on parenting resolutions. So the first resolution that I'd ask you to make is about having faith in your child, thinking to yourself when you're not even with your child that this parent-child relationship is meant to work. It has always worked. That's why we dominate the world, for better or worse. It's because the parent-child relationship is a success. So have faith in yourself as a parent and faith in your child, and that's your first resolution. for the new year. The second is about paying attention to your child's basic needs. In my counseling practice, I found mostly middle-class clients that I had, and they generally assumed that the child was getting enough food, enough sleep, enough attention, getting the education they needed at the school. But when we looked, took a hard look at it, it wasn't necessarily true. Today, life is so complicated, and many parents, the kids get overscheduled because they're interested in a whole lot of things, which is the job of a child. But sometimes the parent needs to limit it. You know, you can only do music and one sport instead of music and three sports or something like that. They may be losing sleep because they're snacking too late at night, or they're playing video games under the covers, or they're texting their friends into the wee hours. There's so many different ways that children don't get the rest, the break, the relaxation, the sleep that they need. There's also the problem of the diet. Some of them, you know, they run out, grab their jacket, forget about breakfast, and then they snack every chance they get, and they're not even hungry for lunch. And then they come home dragging. They haven't paid attention in class because they just don't have the brain nutrients going for them. So this can happen at any level, the upper class, the middle class, and of course, people who truly have time and money challenges. Basic needs is a challenge. And that's why our federal government now gives breakfast as well as lunch in many cases, because they know the children are not getting a balanced diet at home for those at the poverty level. But like I said, even for middle class, the basic needs may not be met. And I'm going to run through them because they're in my book in great length. I'll just mention them quickly. But as I see it, they're basically six physical needs and six relationship needs. And it's important to think of it this way, because I find parents often think that the demands of children are endless. And I've found that if you tick off this checklist, it's not endless. It's not that difficult to meet children's needs if you don't have the wrong idea and think that it's endless and, oh, just go away, I can't deal with it. Instead, realizing, like, wait a minute, if they're really cranky or they're really depressed or they won't talk to you, run down this list. Something needs attention. Physical needs. First of all, sleep, as I've mentioned, good nutrition. Have them have some breakfast. Find some protein breakfast they like. You know, scramble some eggs quick, maybe a hard-boiled egg with some mayonnaise on it, maybe a bowl of warm oatmeal, instant oatmeal is fine. Something with some good protein and try for whole wheat toast so they get some fiber too, because that'll keep their system functioning. And there's pages and pages in the book about exactly how to deal with food issues. The third is light. Kids need light when they're doing their homework, when they're learning to read, when they're playing. They need natural light. They need to get outside, get light, and they need dark when they're going to sleep. We are circadian rhythm mammals, and we need to follow as close as we can that solar pattern. We need air, and we are so careful, especially in winter, to protect ourselves from the expense of heating the great outdoors, that we've insulated our homes to the extent that we don't necessarily have the air we need. And the amount of oxygen in our air has gone down since I was a kid, and nobody ever mentions that, but it's really important. Get out with the trees. They produce oxygen. Have some plants inside, because these kids need air. Their brains are developing quickly. They need a lot of oxygen. And a highly oxygenated environment is found very protective for the immune system, and it helps with preventing all kinds of other diseases as well. So another is water. And everybody's, you know, trying to drink their 6 or 8 glasses of water a day. Make sure your child doesn't get addicted to the sweetened juices or the sodas or diet sodas. Make sure they know water is good. And it's worth spending money on a good filter so that your tap water tastes good. I've found that kids, they don't like the taste of tap water, but if you give them some good filtered water, purified water that's energized and alkalized, they love it. They'll say, wow, you know, I want more of this. And it also hydrates them. And a lot of depression and immune problems come from basic dehydration. Even if they're drinking lots of fluids, if it's not water, it can still be dehydrating. And the sixth is comfort. You need to make sure that their sleeping environment is comfortable, that their study environment is comfortable, that the corner they play in, if they're kindergartners, is comfortable. You want them comfortable. You want to change their diapers frequently or whatever it is, whatever age. So those physical needs, sleep, food, light, air, water, and comfort. The relationship needs are safety, space, nature, companionship, activity, and affection. Safety. Think of, you know, we need to not expose our kids to the daily mayhem on the news because they start to feel fearful. They don't feel safe. They're afraid someone might be threatening the security of the family. So make it age appropriate as to how safe they feel. You know, don't scare them to death about strangers. It's better for you to make sure there's a caring, trusted adult with them at all times, and then gradually teach them how to interact with strangers or not. Space. No matter how small your living space is, your child needs to have an area that is their own, that they can feel related to, have control over, just a corner or, you know, one side of the bed or whatever it is. Nature. This is really, really important. I had a guest on and talked about nature deprivation. Kids need to get out in the green and the blue and get some sunlight to relate to the butterflies, to the frogs, to the running stream, to the flowers, to the plants, to the trees, to see where their apple comes from. If they pick a cherry off a tree, they're going to love cherries for life, even if they thought it was a stupid thing the first time they tried one. Companionship. This can be truly important. They may not have siblings, but they need someone who'll get down on the floor and play with them, whether there's the mom, the dad, a cousin, a dog or cat. They need companionship and social interaction because we're social creatures. Activity. Kids need to be moving. This is what trains their bones and their muscles and their ligaments to keep growing and form a good, healthy body. So it's really important to make sure they are active. If they're feeling depressed or anxious or irritable, walk them outside. Take them for a walk. I used to tell my son to run around the house three times when he was just getting a little too ornery, and he'd do it. He loved it. And come back in, he'd be all smiles and ready to do the next thing. So please encourage your schools to continue outdoor activity for the kids and nature walks and anything that will get them outside and moving. And kids seem to be couch potatoes, they usually will prefer it if someone will play with them. So make it fun. Go outside and do something with them. Might be just rolling a ball back and forth across the living room, but get that body moving. And then the sixth one is affection. We are nurturing creatures. We nurture each other, and as parents, we have all the hormones that tell us to nurture, and we should not deny them. There was a time when they thought, oh, that's spoiling the child if you hug them and kiss them. But the only thing that's spoiling is if you substitute something other than affection and respect, like buying too many toys. You know, if you're quiet in the store, I'll buy you your ice cream. Bargaining and buying is spoiling. I used to tell my kids, virtue is its own reward. You're going to feel good by behaving. And, of course, you reward them with your love and attention. But you don't buy good behavior. So those are the relationship needs, safety, space, nature, companionship, activity, and affection. And so that's the second resolution, is to go over that list and make sure your child's basic needs are taken care of. When I was counseling, I found that 90% of the parent-child stress was because some basic need was not being met. No breakfast, no snack after school, no sense of companionship, no relationship with nature, not enough sleep. It's amazing how simple changes in the lifestyle can have dramatic effects on the child's mood, so that you as a parent don't give up on them, and you have the power. And that is why you're the parent, really. You control the environment of your child, at least when they're home. You control that environment and make the most of it until they're too big to push around. And I figure that's usually around 14. So you want to guide them and control their environment as much as possible. And that means putting parental controls on the TV and the computer and everything else as much as you can. And also explaining to them, instructing them that some things are appropriate and some aren't. So paying attention to your basic needs of the child as the second resolution. The third secret is listening. And there's another myth around listening, that if you just hear the child out and give them your solutions to their problems, it'll be great. But parents, often the child won't even talk to them. So the idea is to listen in a non-judgmental way and not even be self-listening to your answers or your reasoning or your fears or your emotions, but to really listen with both ears, in open listening, where you're using your empathy. Why are they feeling this way? Not, oh, they shouldn't feel this way. Like I had one client that the son just hated his math teacher, and he was good at math, but he was failing that year because he hated the teacher. And the mother was saying, you shouldn't feel that way. You need to do well in math. You want to be a scientist. And finally, we just said, let's just listen. Let him tell you exactly why he hates the teacher. Well, it turns out the teacher was picking on another student that he really liked. And so she asked him, would you like me to talk to the teacher about it? Which he said, that sounds really weird. So she didn't do that, but she explained to him that he needed to maybe be a friend to that child, and maybe if he felt like it, if it was age appropriate, for him to speak to the teacher himself and say, you know, I like math, but I hate it when you're yelling at Susie. So the solutions will emerge if you listen without judgment, but with a lot of empathy. Why is my child feeling this way? I would probably feel the same in the same situation. What would be a good way to handle it? So there's so much pressure on parents today to do things quickly and to share themselves as fast as they can, give good advice. Kids often will come up with their own solutions if you take the time to listen and hear them out. So that's another resolution, parenting resolution for 2013, is to listen with an open mind, with empathy, not listening to yourself, what smart answer can I have, but really listen and ask questions or repeat back what they've said, because that will keep them talking until they start to see their own solutions. So secret number four is letting go. And this is another myth that, it's a big step when they go to kindergarten, or big step when they graduate high school, or big step when they go off to college. Letting go starts the day they're born. And they are always going to be pushing the envelope, and it's our job to temper that, to protect them from risks they aren't ready to understand, and to let them push when it's safe. And so, you know, my two-year-old was pulling her clothes out, deciding what she wants to wear. That's a safe choice. The kinds of things that we can let them go on, we need to think about ahead of time. Don't wait till they're pushing the envelope and then come up with five different reasons why they shouldn't do what they want to do. Instead, think, you know, okay, they're 6 months older. I should think about whether maybe they can do this or that on their own. So be constantly aware that this is a letting go process. And the more gradual it is, the better. So when you've let go entirely and they're adults and they're having their own marriage and children, whatever they want to do, their own careers, you can have a real relationship because you have gradually let go. They trust you to give them the full responsibility they can handle. So that's key. The letting go is for them to build trust that if you yank them back, it's because it's a really good reason that there's a car in the way, not that you're hanging on so tight that they're going to have to fight you and they're not going to pay attention when it's really a critical, risky moment. So you're building trust by letting go gradually. So that's another parenting resolution, to think in your mind when you're not with your child, where can I let go a little more? And where do I really want to draw the line because that's too risky? And think those things through. It's really important to have that in your mind before they challenge you, because they will. That's their job. The next secret is about modeling, what I call modeling. It's setting an example. And there, the biggest myth, I think, is that we have a child-centered society and we all want to be, you know, a good soccer mom. It's really important instead to model adult life so that our children will see adulthood as something worth working towards. I think that's really key. If kids, especially teenagers, look at their parents and say, well, gee, they're supposed to be in love, but they hardly talk to each other, and all they do is chauffeur me around and complain about my grades, and what's the use of being an adult? You don't want them to have that impression. So you want to model enjoying your own life. You need to be good to yourself. Take care of yourself. If you love yoga, do yoga. If you love walks, do walks. If you love stuffed animals, have your own collection of stuffed animals. Modeling is really key. So that's going to be our fifth resolution. And we're up on a break. And I think, are we not? No, I guess not. So the sixth secret is what I call expression. I speak my mind and I know when to stop. That's key. So again, we don't just blurt out whatever comes, you know, some smart answer to stop the child in their tracks. This is not what we want to do. So we are up on another break, so we're going to talk about some of the myths about how to communicate with your child, how to really express your position. So stay tuned.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living.
To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. I'm Randy Rolfe, your host, and today, the last week of the year, I'm just sharing some of my thoughts about parenting based on my 30 years as a family therapist. And I want to encourage you to call in anytime if you're listening live, 866-472-5792. And all the shows are archived, have over 60 wonderful experts that you can access at voiceamerica.com. So do listen to past shows. And we're talking today about parenting resolutions for 2013. And the core is what's going on in your head as a parent. And we've talked about a couple resolutions. One is to have faith in the parent-child relationship and in your child. The second is to really focus on basic needs. If things aren't quite the way they should be, you need to take a look at the basic needs of your child. What's missing? Maybe not quite enough protein in the morning, or too many snacks at night, or not enough sleep, or frustration with something at school where they're not feeling safe, or being bullied, or don't have a space where they can keep their treasures. And then the third is a resolution is to listen with an open mind, with empathy, and not be self-listening of, how can I sound like a parent? It's much more important to be a parent, to know you have the authority, you have the control, you have the power. Your job is to just be there for them and help them solve their problems. The fourth resolution is letting go, starting right at birth, to let them challenge, let them push, and to know in your heart and in your mind where you're willing to let them experiment and where you're not, and be clear about that. The fifth resolution is modeling. Set a good model of what it is to be an adult. I had one family where the dad said, the kids don't eat right. They just never sit down for a meal. And I said, well, have they seen you sit down for a meal? And he said, oh, heavens no. I leave before they're awake, and then I'm working at night, and I just grab something after they're in bed. And I'm like, well, let's set an example of eating a meal. And so we went over the schedule, and there were only two meals in the whole week where he could be eating with his children. But that made the difference. They started to realize that the meals are a good thing. It's a social fun time if you keep it light. And he set a good example. So that's what modeling is. I have a life too, and I share it with my child. I'm not totally about disciplining my child. The sixth is expression. I speak my mind and I know when to stop. And I've had some great advice very early on in my own parenting. And that was if your child wants to do something that you really don't want them to do, go out and play in the mud just before they go to grandma's, for instance, is to give them three good reasons. Wow, it'd be fun to play in the mud. Water's great. You know, I know you love to be free. And then have one good reason, your real reason. And if it's to please grandma, so be it. You don't have to dream up three other reasons because they will shoot each one down. Kids are smart. And if you're not giving them the real reason, you're going to hem and haw and they'll know it. So, again, think ahead. How am I going to get this child in the car without spoiling their clothes? And it's about having one good reason and giving them that you empathize. Okay, you know, it would be really fun. Next time it rains, let's go out and jump in puddles. But we're going to grandma's today, and she would like to see you looking good. So, of course, there's much tougher questions with teenagers, but it's the same thing. Say you'd love to go to that party. I know your best friend's going, but you and I know there are going to be some bad characters there. And at your age, I'm not comfortable letting you go. That's it. There's no argument. There's no manipulating. It's I, the parent, am making this decision because that's what I'm comfortable with as your parent. So that's really critical. And knowing when to stop, you know, don't come up with five other reasons, you know, trying to pile them on. Know ahead of time what your real reason is and stick to it. Your child will respect you and they'll trust you. So that's really key. And so that resolution is to think ahead and speak your mind clearly and with conviction and then stop and let it sink in. Trust them. We go back to faith. Trust them to let it sink in properly. And the last resolution is celebration. And we've just been celebrating the end of the year, the winter, the coming of the sunlight in the northern hemisphere. In the southern hemisphere, they're going into winter, into the darkness. But in the northern hemisphere, where the U.S. is, we're celebrating the rebirth of the sun. Every day is getting longer now. And every culture has a celebration there, and often tied with the wonderful religious events, of course. But it's not just about family holidays. It's not, we don't need to take our holidays from our religious tradition or our political tradition or when are the banks closed. We need to celebrate every day. And that means a hug, a kiss goodnight, a statement like, I love having you in my life. I love the way you put on different colored socks every day. I love it when you laugh. I love the way you play with the cat. I love it when you're just bound out of the car when you want to go play with your sister. Making it clear that you are happy this child is in your life and celebrate. And it's excellent to celebrate as a model, celebrate your other relationships, your relationship with your parents, your relationship with cousins or spouse, to really let them know that there is joy even in daily life. Celebrate, you know, how they eat their salad first or they eat their potato first or whatever it is. There's always something. And I remember when I was a little kid, I always complimented people on their shoes because I was very small and that's what I was focused on. And if I didn't even like them, I'd just say, I like your shoes. So there's always something. I like your crazy hair today. And, you know, good managers say that to their employees in the office. You know, I like the way you typed that report. Just let them know that you celebrate their being in your life. And never mix up their behavior with who they truly are, because the behavior always has some purpose. And it may not be a behavior you like, but deep down, have faith in the child because they do want to please you. So that resolution is to just say a few things more often. I love you. And if they're 12 or 13, they're going to think it's hokey if you haven't been doing it all along, or even if you had been doing it all along. But you know, do it more privately than they're used to. But still do it at night or when you see them, when you haven't seen them in a while. I'm a big advocate of greetings. When you, even if you are in two different rooms for 15 minutes, it's still great to say hi or smile when you pass in the hallway. Let them know that you acknowledge their being and that you are pleased that they're in your life. And, you know, don't lie. If they're really making you upset that day, you say, hey, this has been a tough day. Sometimes I think you're a real pain in the neck. But use that I message. I'm feeling this way right now. Not you're a real pain in the neck, but sometimes I'm feeling that you're a real pain in the neck. Often the child will laugh instead of internalizing that self moniker that they're a pain in the neck. So always speak from where you're at. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not going to permit you to do that because I'm the parent. I don't like the way you're talking to me. Just say you're a bad mouth, because then they'll go to school and be a bad mouth. But if you say, I don't like the way you talk to me, you're taking responsibility for your reaction. And kids learn. They do learn from consequences. So don't be afraid to make that consequence. You have made me mad today. I'm feeling angry today. I love you, but man, you're testing me today. So that's the kind of communication that they're going to trust. And that's where your ability to protect them and educate them and advise them is based on their continuing trust. They're born trusting you. It's our job to let that continue with these secret thoughts that we have in our heads. So I hope that's been helpful to you. If anybody has any questions, just give me a call, 866-472-5792. Or you can go to my website and email me. There's some downloads and audio on there that you can benefit from. If you just leave your email. And I also have a weekly newsletter that I'd be happy to send you if you just drop me a line. So good luck with your parenting resolutions. I know that 2013 is going to be a great opportunity to be a great parent. And if you're feeling that you're not quite there yet, don't worry. Have faith in yourself. Think about these few things we've talked about today. Get hold of my books if you want more detail or more lists and more of those dialogues. There are a lot of scripts in my books that help you pick something that really sounds real to you within the particular relationship you have with your child and at different ages and different stages. So feel free to develop your own dialogues with yourself first and then with your child. So I wish you a very, very happy 2013 and a very happy, healthy family life. And thank you for listening. Thank you for being a listener of Family First. And happy 2013. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolf, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.